Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 290, entitled The Kido Organization and the Post-War Japanese Economy. The Kido reference is to the Lord Privy Seal Koichi Kido, and just like Martin Bormann, he ran a flight capital organization in which the looted capital that was acquired by Japan during World War II was secreted abroad, and then it provided the foundation for the post-World War II recovery and success of Japan in the post-war period, establishing an economic as well as a political continuity between the imperial and fascist period of Japan and post-war Japan. The foundation for what we're examining is an article that we looked at inside one of this broadcast. That article is from the Financial Times of London, the weekend edition of April 7th and April 8th of 2001. It's titled Mischief or Conspiracy. It's by Gillian Tett. And by the way, this is being recorded on April 8th of 2001. Skipping down about the M Fund bonds that we looked at inside one. But if that looks suspicious, the other explanation is far stranger and begins in the early 20th century when Japan invaded its Asian neighbors and looted vast wealth. And what we're going to look at now is the Kido organization, basically the Japanese equivalent of the Bormann organization and its relationship to post-war Japan. We're going to be relying for our discussion of the Kido organization on the definitive work about the Bormann organization. That book is entitled Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart Incorporated, copyright 1981. The book is authored by Paul Manning, the ISBN number 0-8184-0309-8. Paul Manning was part of the CBS News team that covered World War II in Europe, along with Edward R. Murrow. He covered the air raids into Europe by training as a gunner aboard a B-17, was credited with shooting down an ME-109. He then broadcast the surrender of Germany on the CBS radio network. He then trained as a gunner aboard a B-29 to cover the air raids into Japan, and ultimately broadcast the surrender of Japan as well on the CBS radio network. Paul Manning spent his post-war career studying the Bormann organization, ultimately wrote this book. He had his career destroyed. Book contracts with major companies were canceled due to pressure by the Bormann organization. Lyle Stewart had both of his legs broken the week the book was published. And ultimately, Jerry Manning, his son, was murdered in retribution for Paul Manning's research on the Bormann organization. In Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, Paul Manning also discusses the Kido organization, and again, that's named for Lord Privy Seal Koichi Kido, K-O-I-C-H-I is his first name, and Kido is K-I-D-O. And the first element of the Kido organization we're going to examine is the looting of much of occupied Asia by Japan, and ultimately we're going to take a look at how the Kido flight capital organization secreted that capital abroad. By the way, as we looked at in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Japanese Fascism, Its History and Structure, as well as in RFAs number 7 and 11, we took a look at the rise of Japanese fascism, and in particular we took a look at the Zaibatsu, the so-called family trusts, which were the dominant power in pre-war and wartime Japan. Ultimately, they coalesced into the Keiretsu, the post-war Japanese cartels. We also took a look at the fact that Emperor Hirohito himself, by the way, Emperor H-I-R-O-H-I-T-O's name is usually mispronounced by Americans, Hirohito. His name is actually pronounced Hirohito. That's the correct pronunciation. Emperor Hirohito himself was not only a principal figure involved in the conduct of the war, but was also one of the principal financial beneficiaries of Japanese imperialism and fascism. We're going to begin with Paul Manning's account of the looting of occupied Asia by Japan and ultimately the secreting abroad of that wealth through the Kido organization. Paul Manning writes, by 1944, Japan had taken 25 tons of gold from the vaults and mines of various Asiatic countries it had overrun. Like the Third Reich, the Japanese pattern of conquest and pillage prevailed. As armies marched, fought, and conquered, they were followed by the ubiquitous bankers and business specialists who assumed economic control of the lands and people and assets they coveted. They seized gold and formed companies to mine for minerals, oil, coal, and all other substances necessary to a resource-poor country like Japan. as it established companies in Manchuria, China, Taiwan, Korea, Hong Kong, Singapore, the Philippines, French Indochina, Burma, and the Dutch East Indies, it did so beneath the imperial banner and patriotic slogans, "The Emperor is divine, and the Japanese people are superior to other races and are fated to rule the world," unquote. But behind the slogans was a hard-headed commercialism dedicated to profits for the Zaibatsus, which included the imperial household Zaibatsu, funneled through stock ownership and the scores of corporations established in banking and industry of each conquered country. And again, for more detail on that, we can look at the work done by George Seldes in his book Facts and Fascism, that accessed in the aforementioned miscellaneous archive show about Japanese fascism, that is available from Spitfire. Continuing. Like so many other movable assets, the 25 tons of gold bullion disappeared in 1944, and this is a secret known only to a cadre of top leadership among the Zaibatsu. Still, when General MacArthur finally implanted a new constitution on Japan and approved a new government in 1947, this leadership informed the Supreme Commander that $2 billion in gold had been flown back from bank vaults in Korea in August of 1945 and sunk in sealed containers in Tokyo Harbor. It requested in 1947 that this treasure be retrieved and placed in the National Treasury to secure the new currency. General MacArthur readily agreed, but it was the first 25 tons of gold that formed an economic bedrock which helped Japan rise from the ashes. Toil and sacrifice and American aid were all part of the contributing picture, but as Martin Bormann remarked about the advisability of placing German assets beyond the reach of the Allies, quote, "The fatherland will need this to rise again," unquote. And we're going to take a look at the creation of and operation of the Kido Organization, again, the Japanese flight capital organization that is the Japanese counterpart to the Bormann Group. Turning once again to Martin Bormann, Nazi in exile, we read of Hermann Schmitz, the head of IG Farben, in his coaching of Martin Bormann about how Emperor Hirohito and the Zaibatsu were secreting their capital abroad in anticipation of military defeat. Paul Manning writes, "Hermann Schmitz, who had 11 IG Farben companies in Japan, as well as the intelligence organization of Max Ilgner's NW7, the IG Verbindungsmanner, who were the liaison officers between Farben in Japan and the Home Office in Germany, let him in on some of the fiscal secrets of Emperor Hirohito, who used Swiss banks to place his enormous liquid fortune beyond the reach of the Allies. So did the industrial and financial leaders of Japan, who also knew how to move their wealth around the world." Skipping down. With his immense land holdings and the profits from his many investments, Emperor Hirohito was by far the wealthiest individual in Japan. Within the structure was the Lord Keeper of the Privy Seal, the Emperor's most important advisor, the only one who could offer unsolicited comments. From 1940 to the end of the war, the Lord Keeper of the Privy Seal was Marcus Koichi Kido, who performed just as ably for Hirohito as Martin Bormann did for Hitler. Kido learned in 1944 through the Japanese ambassador in Berlin, General Hiroshi Baron Oshima, that Reichsleiter Martin Bormann had given orders to German industry to begin transferring movable wealth from the Third Reich to neutral nations of the world. Bormann, so Oshima said, was also moving party funds to Switzerland and Buenos Aires. It was a signal loud and clear that Germany had lost the war and was making preparations for a future point in time when liquid assets and economic power bastions outside the Third Reich would come to the assistance of a new Germany. And when Emperor Hirohito received his two requested reports on the future of the war in the Pacific from his Army and Navy Chiefs of Staff, he too concluded that their war could not be won. He asked Kido to prepare a peace plan for the Japanese nation, and Kido began work on it in January of 1944. The Lord Privy Seal envisioned the first step in any peace plan as one that would preserve the imperial throne and its imperial wealth. Kido held meetings with key bankers, and the transfers of imperial money to Swiss accounts was effected smoothly via bank telegraph credit, inasmuch as major Japanese banks had their own correspondent banking relationships with the important fiscal institutions of Switzerland. Emperor Hiroshito and his imperial household Zaibatsu had stock ownership and deposits in 14 of the major Japanese banks, all of which cherished the honor of acting as an imperial depository. The 14 banks gave all assistance necessary, of course, to the Kido transfer plan. However, as Hermann Schmitz pointed out to Reichsleiter Bormann during their 1944 meeting on Third Reich fiscal strategy, the most important bank to the imperial family was the Yokohama Specie Bank. The family owned a 25% controlling interest, and therefore it was the major instrument used in the movements of large currency credits and other liquid assets to Switzerland, where Yokohama Specie Bank had a branch and correspondent relations with Swiss and German banks. The importance of Yokohama Specie to the German Central Bank and the economic conduct of the war, which also generated further income from the bank's major shareholder, was contained in a code intercept by MAGIC, the U.S. codebreaker structure, in a message from the Japanese ambassador in Berlin to Tokyo on March 19, 1942. Quote, "Pending consummation of the German-Japanese economic talks in Tokyo and their satisfactory conclusion by March 31st, Germany will place 10 million marks to Japan's credit in payment for war materials delivered to that date. The technical details concerning use of the fund and repayment will be handled by the German Reichsbank and the Yokohama Specie Bank." In his transfer plan of 1944, Lord Privy Seal Kido was confronted with the problem of physically moving the Emperor's gold kilo bars from the Imperial Palace to some safe haven where their value would be credited to the Imperial account in Switzerland. In 1944, when Japanese fighter planes still controlled the airspace of northern Asia, this proved a soluble problem. The major Swiss banks, such as Swiss Bank Corporation, have five key areas throughout the world where gold and silver bars can be deposited in Swiss-controlled vaults, with a credit then telegraphed to the relevant bank in Switzerland. These key localities are known in the Swiss banking business as loco, so once Kido had dispatched a Japanese imperial courier plane with fighter escort to Hong Kong and Macau and other sites with imperial kilo bars, they quickly became a deposit credit in the Swiss receiver bank. By the end of the war, the deposits on hand were astronomical, and during the post-war rehabilitation of Japan, the imperial fortune kept increasing from the interest charges for loans to various Zaibatsu companies who were struggling, as were German firms, for a comeback in world markets. As a result of these transfers, American SCAP, Supreme Commander Allied Powers fiscal investigators, found the imperial vaults pretty nearly bare when they went poking through the recorded assets in the Imperial Palace following Japanese surrender aboard the USS Missouri on September 2, 1945. By the way, the MAGIC intercepts was the code name for the U.S. codebreaker structure that was alluded to earlier. And again, note that through the interest charges, ultimately the wealth of the imperial family and the Zaibatsu continued to increase. Continuing with Paul Manning's account of the Kido Flight Capital Organization, again the foundation for post-war Japan, we read, "In 1944, while the Lord Privy Seal was making his peace plans, Emperor Hiroshito waited for the ultimate excuse for withdrawal from the war. Kido had recommended the removal of Prime Minister Tojo from office in 1944. Tojo had originally been placed in office on the recommendation of Kido, but now he was to take the blame for the defeat and for the atrocities the Japanese forces had committed when it was foreseen that the war was lost. Actually, the war had been planned in the war room of the Imperial Palace, from the attack and rape of Nanking to the bombing of Pearl Harbor, with the Emperor an interested participant in all major strategic decisions. From February of 1944 to the fall of the Tojo cabinet, all cabinet meetings were held in the Imperial Palace to impress the public with the seriousness of the situation, as well as to give imperial sanction to emergency measures. At one cabinet meeting, Kido had remarked, quote, "If the Tojo cabinet continues in power, it will surely mean revolution within the country, and domestic disruption will destroy Japan," unquote. To the Lord Privy Seal, It also meant that the imperial household and the emperor would be destroyed. Kido moved to cosmetize the role of the emperor in the war, stressing always that he had only been a benevolent figurehead. Excuse me, that obviously was not the case. As we're going to see in just a couple of minutes, the latter part of the Japanese involvement in World War II was what is known in military parlance as a rear guard action, and basically the bloody sacrifices made by Japanese fighting men and the enormous cost in life and fortune to the Japanese people was effected by Lord Privy Seal Kido on behalf of the emperor, and in order to permit the Zaibatsu and the emperor to secret their enormous capital abroad for the benefit of them in the post-war period. And ultimately, the Japanese people themselves and the Japanese military establishment were sacrificed to this goal. Resuming again with the section that we were just reading, at one cabinet meeting, Kido had remarked, quote, "If the Tojo cabinet continues in power, it will surely mean revolution within the country, and domestic disruption will destroy Japan," unquote. To the Lord Privy Seal, it also meant that the imperial household and the emperor would be destroyed. Kido moved to cosmetize the role of the emperor in the war, stressing always that he had only been a benevolent figurehead. Kido knew the people would have to be prepared for surrender. The fighting men had staked their honor on victory or suicide, and vast numbers had died in the emperor's name. If peace was premature, many would say that Hiroshito lacked the courage to fight the war through to the end. Widows and orphans would blame the emperor for causing their fathers and husbands to die in vain. The emperor and Kido knew that the people had reached the point where they were eager to see an end to the war. When the time arrived that they thought it was they who had fought poorly and let the emperor down, then, and only then, if Hiroshito declared for peace, would the people feel obligated to him. As the Lord Privy Seal focused on his imperial peace plans, the emperor studied the charts in his war room. It is a myth that the emperor stood above shot and shell. From 1937 to the war's end, he had been closely involved in the conduct of Japanese expansion into China and to the south and west. He had appointed Tojo as prime minister for his warlike qualities, and when he spoke with Admiral Yamamoto before the attack on the United States, he had asked the admiral's opinion as to how the war would go. Admiral Yamamoto had said, quote, "I will run wild for the first 18 months of the war, and after that it will all be downhill. But I will do my duty for the emperor," unquote. Hiroshito had nodded, replying, "By then, Hitler will have won his war in Europe, and the United States will make an accommodation with Japan, which will give us much of the territory we have gained." And skipping down, while the emperor waited for an excuse for withdrawal from the war, he approved the many defensive measures being undertaken to repel the invaders. Like Hitler, he toyed with the thought of leaving the nation's capital. So some 75,000 men toiled beneath the peaks and valleys of the Nagano Alps, building tunnels in which Hiroshito could preside over the final defense of Japan. But like Adolf Hitler, the emperor had no intention of leaving Tokyo. His propaganda minister, like Dr. Goebbels in Berlin, fostered the notion of battle to the last, but it was smoke of sorts, contrived to make more steadfast the flagging will of the people. On August 7, 1945, the emperor was presented with his reason to initiate peace. He received the Japanese army report of the atomic destruction of Hiroshima. 2 days later, on August 9th, a second A bomb was dropped on Nagasaki. Although the emperor and Lord Privy Seal Kido had been thinking about surrender for 19 months before the two atomic bombs fell, it took only days for Emperor Hiroshito to agree to surrender terms on the Potsdam Declaration. At this point in time, as in Berlin, the preparations for post-war commercial survival for two defeated nations had been completed, and only now the final scenario had to be played out. For Bormann, the blueprint was clear, and he was to follow it with precision. For the emperor and Kido, General MacArthur would be a worthy protagonist. In the end, the emperor and the supreme commander came to admire each other, And it was MacArthur who, in the end, dissuaded the War Crimes Commission in London from trying Emperor Hiroshito as a war criminal. He said, quote, "His indictment will unquestionably cause a tremendous convulsion among the Japanese people, the repercussions of which cannot be overestimated. He is a symbol which unites all Japanese. Destroy him, and the nation will disintegrate. They will regard Allied action as a betrayal on their history, and the hatreds and resentments engendered by this thought will unquestionably last for all measurable time. A vendetta for revenge will thereby be initiated whose cycle may well not be complete for centuries, if ever. I believe all hope of introducing modern democratic methods would disappear. It is quite possible that a minimum of 1 million troops would be required, which would have to be maintained for an indefinite number of years," unquote. There was more to the MacArthur opinion, but the thought of 1 million Allied troops with a vast bureaucratic force chilled the War Crimes Commission. As a consequence, it was decided to settle for a war crimes trial at a lesser level. Lord Privy Seal Kido was tried as a war criminal along with 36 others and sentenced to life imprisonment. At the time of this trial, Kido's counterpart in Germany, Martin Bormann, was to make his plans for personal survival, and they did not include prison and death at Nuremberg. The Zaibatsu was to be outlawed during the occupation of Japan by General MacArthur as a way of breaking the stranglehold held by the few on the economy of this nation. And as we're about to see, that turned out to be something of a myth, because the Zaibatsu were succeeded by the Karetsu. By the way, Zaibatsu was Zaibatsu, and again, we discussed that in the Miscellaneous Archive show on the history and structure of Japanese fascism. And Keiretsu is spelled K-E-I-R-E-S-T-S-U. Continuing with Manning's account, "But once the occupation ended, and Japan again became master of her own destiny, the family-controlled holding companies were to make their comeback bigger and stronger than ever before, under the name Keiretsu, which also means group. Today, the six big Keiretsu control the economy. In fact, they are the economy. The six largest groups control 40% of the nation's corporate capital and 30% of its corporate assets. The trading companies of these six Keiretsu hold stock in more than 5,400 companies in Japan, and the Keiretsu banks own even more. The Mitsubishi and Mitsui families were Zaibatsu before their holding companies were broken up by MacArthur, but today they are comfortable Keiretsu. It was never General MacArthur's purpose to strip clean the imperial family, but to breathe some fresh contemporary air into an archaic economy by removing structures that had generated a war machine based on absolute strength, the basis of Japan's military might before and during World War II. Hiroshito was to turn over to the people of Japan his forest lands, museums, artistic treasures, and heirlooms. However, the wealth that had been transferred on his behalf, as well as on behalf of the other Zaibatsu families, was never touched and represented bastions of economic strength, as did the wealth that was established by Martin Bormann on behalf of the Third Reich. As was proven in time, the wealth and the corporations controlled by the Bormann organizations on the one hand, in the Federal Republic of Germany, 1% of the corporate leadership controls 40% of the industry and finance, and by the Zaibatsu Keiretsu along the holdings of the imperial family, were the basic instruments that guided both defeated nations back to economic power. That last sentence again, as was proven in time, the wealth and the corporations controlled by the Bormann organization on the one hand, in the Federal Republic of Germany, 1% of the corporate leadership controls 40% of the industry and finance, and by the Zaibatsu Keiretsu, along with the holdings of the imperial family, were the basic instruments that guided both defeated nations back to economic power. And again, in understanding the Japanese economy, it is very incestuous and very concentrated. There are also, as I'm speaking on April 8th of the year 2001, remains a very, very serious problem about the Japanese economy collapsing and wreaking havoc in the world economic structure. I would also note, as we will be examining in a program to be coming up in a matter of weeks, we're going to be examining the reemergence of Japanese fascism, because historical revisionism and reemergent fascism are very much present in Japan. I've made allusions to various tapes that are available from a tape duplication service. The name of that duplication service is Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Spitfirelist is one word. And by the time this program goes out to the various stations that carry the broadcast, there will be a detailed and annotated description of For the Record program number 290 on the Spitfire website in the For the Record section. You can visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. And again, Spitfire List is one word. Sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record segments on Real Audio. You can visit recent For the Record Real Audio segments on their website at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, D-A-V-E-E-M-O-R-Y. Older For the Record segments are being archived on a related website. That URL is http://archive.wfmu.org/archive/D/X/. You can listen to the three-hour program that I do on Sunday night on KFJC-FM from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time on KFJC.org. You can also listen from 6 to 7 Pacific Time on Thursday on that same web address. Listeners can email me at demory@kfjc.org. This concludes For the Record program number 290, Side 2. The title of the broadcast is The Postwar Japanese Economy and the Kido Organization, the Japanese counterpart of the Bormann Organization. This is being recorded on April 8th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.